Welcome to episode 22 of All the Small Takes. I'm joined tonight, as always, by John and Cooper. How are you guys doing? I hope you're doing better than I am, because just apologies in advance. I'm kind of dragging tonight.
Wow, that's pretty exciting that you're dragging tonight. But I'm I'm fine.
It's Game of Thrones, man.
It's Game of Thrones. Exciting episode.
I actually don't watch. Cooper, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Game of Thrones was awesome. John's wearing his Notre Dame jersey, which always brings me joy.
Manti.
And one, also, because he always smiles when he wears it. Two, because I know it just brings back memories of how bad Notre Dame was last year. And I think that brings John a little bit of misery, which brings me joy.
I am always the optimist, the dreamer of far-flung dreams and the hoper of far-off hopes.
And Cooper's wearing his Ohio State jersey. In an act of defiance towards John.
Yeah, hold up. Correction. I'm wearing my Ohio State Ezekiel Elliott National Championship jersey.
It doesn't look authentic. I don't think it's cropped.
That's,
is it cropped?
Hold up.
Not safe for work.
Cropped now.
All right, we'll tweet this one out later, right, Cooper?
Sure. Yeah, why not?
We'll tweet that right now.
Yep. All right, you can find All the Small Takes on social media, Twitter at Small Takes, Instagram small_takes, Facebook All the Small Takes, and Gmail allthesmalltakes@gmail.com.
And maybe
we've got a full episode. What's up?
Ooh, and maybe somewhere else in like 4 days. Maybe.
Spoiler alert.
Weather Eye.
Yeah.
So we've got a full episode this week. We've got a U.S. men's national team update. We're going to do our first round of college football previews because we cannot wait for college football and there's nothing else to talk about right now. We're gonna have a guest on to talk about the Big 12, so get excited for that. But right now, U.S. men's national team has been playing in some kind of cup or multiple cups. I'm not really sure at this point anymore. What's going on with the lads?
Yeah, so we played our last game of the group stage against Honduras, which we won 3-0, which helped us win our group stage.
John, somehow you messed this up twice already. It's not Honduras.
It's Nicaragua? Are you kidding
me? Yes, Nicaragua.
I thought about that. All right, well, whatever. We beat Nicaragua. Who cares? We beat them 3-0. We're going to play our first game of the elimination stage in the greatest city in the U.S., Philadelphia. And we added – we swapped 6 guys out on our roster. So we added Michael Bradley, some goalkeepers, and I can feel that Cooper is upset that we dropped Dom Dwyer.
Yeah, so Bruce Arena decided to add Jozy Altidore and Clint Dempsey and drop Dom Dwyer and Alejandro Bedoya. Very upset about it. I get adding Clint Dempsey. I understand adding both of those players. They're your starting forwards. Yeah. And Clint Dempsey is about to like bag a record-breaking goal for the U.S. men's national team. Dom Dwyer was excellent in this tournament. I was very excited for him as a U.S. fan for a long time. I've argued with John that the U.S. men's national team needs a true forward. They don't have one. They finally got Christian Pulisic, who can be kind of their link-up guy. They need a striker. They don't have one. Dom Dwyer, I think, with Bobby Wood, is probably the closest we get to having one as a like kind of complete package forward. And instead, Bruce Arena decided to send him home, and he kept Jordan Morris on the team, who is fat. And I'm just very upset about it. Jordan Morris is fat. He shouldn't be on the U.S. men's national team. I'm still very angry that he decided to stay here instead of taking his opportunity to play in Europe. I don't get it. I don't understand it at all.
So for those of us less well-versed in the world of U.S. soccer, give us a little background on Jordan Morris.
So Jordan Morris is what? He's like 22, 23? He can't be that old. He won Rookie of the Year last year in the MLS. He was a very promising player at Stanford in his junior year of college, got offers from many European teams to come play for them and leave his, you know, collegiate career behind at Stanford and not finish college. He decided to finish college and he got drafted by his youth academy team, which is Seattle Sounders. He's doing quite well in the MLS, granted, but like it's MLS is the MLS. And, you know, if you watched Manchester United destroy the LA Galaxy, like 5-2, and it shows the quality of the MLS, right? So Jordan Morris, I think in many eyes, kind of, I don't know, he had an opportunity to develop into a very good player. And in my eyes, he he just doesn't have it.
But isn't that what you guys, or at least I know John would advocate for this? Like, don't we need these good American players staying and playing in the MLS to build up soccer in this country and to develop the MLS as a pipeline of talent for the men's national team?
Okay, so that is an interesting argument.
Point, Jeff.
But I think,
thank you. I get very few of them.
I think we can refute that by saying what we need our best players to do is we need our best players to finally develop. We have had Jordan Morris is just the latest in a long line of guys with a lot of talent who never develop into anything because they're not getting the attention or the challenge that they need. Christian Pulisic is the first in a line of guys who have all that talent and are getting the challenges they need and are developing because of it. We need more players like Christian Pulisic, and we have to cross that bridge first to where we have legitimate international players before we start saying our guys need to come home and play with our teams.
Oh, go ahead, Cooper. You were going to say
The two are going to complement each other, right? Yeah. So as soon as American international players become better, maybe that's overseas, the MLS will grow. The MLS has its own internal problems that are, I don't know, preventing the appropriate development of their players. So I think if you are a top-tier American player, your best chance of development is overseas. That's universal. I think most people would agree with me on that.
Yeah. And like Michael Bradley, Dempsey, all of our players who we think are very good right now, all at least spent some time overseas. And Jordan Morris, really, it's inexplicable this early on in his career that he didn't take a flyer, go out, play for some European club, because the offer is always going to be there to come back to the MLS. He is never going to have an issue to come back and be on an MLS team.
But isn't that the problem with the MLS? It's like the old-timers club of like European soccer.
That's not a problem. We're getting big-name players to come back here and to play, and we're teaching. We're like, people are getting to see like Andrea Pirlo and for a while David Beckham play, and that's not a bad thing. We're jumping into this international culture of soccer. What we need the MLS teams to do is to invest in youth academies and to start convincing people like Jordan Morris, look, you have a future in soccer. You can choose to go to college and be a student athlete, or you can come with us and be an athlete full time. And
hey, come get paid or go and don't get paid.
Yeah, it's not a legitimate option right now for a lot of young players because the youth academies aren't there. So the MLS has an infrastructure problem they need to fix, and because they need to fix that right now, best option is go get some Euro experience.
John, I think you should pivot your college football commissionership into FIFA an MLS commissionership or both.
Ooh, both.
Okay.
Fix the whole system.
I mean, just let's not close any doors. Let's just run for all of them at once. Why close doors?
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. We'll see which one picks up first.
Keep a weather eye out. Anything else on the U.S. men's national team? When do we play next?
Doesn't matter. Just stay tuned for the final in which we'll play Mexico.
All right. Cooper, FC Cincinnati update really quickly from you.
Nothing, really. Their U.S. Open Cup game got postponed because of a torrential downpour in Miami. So I'm still waiting for that quarterfinal game. Hopefully they win because the semifinal will be here in Cincinnati, and I will attend.
What's the latest news on the purple and orange striped uniforms?
Haven't heard back.
Haven't heard back yet. All right.
Well, just let them know that if they want like a sponsor's logo to smack on there, all the small takes DMs are open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's we won't pay.
That's in our budget.
We'll put it on there.
Yeah,
we won't pay.
Basically, it benefits them only because the strength of our brand bringing fans that otherwise wouldn't cheer for the team. Yeah, contact us for details. DMs are open. Let's talk college football. We're gonna bring on now our second ever guest, one of our good friends. He was the best man at my wedding, and he's a Big 12 guy through and through. We're kicking it now to Carl. All right, we now welcome on our Big 12 correspondent and good friend and second ever All the Small Takes guest. His name is Carl. He hails from Kansas City. He is broadcasting live from Kansas City, and he's going to help us preview Big 12 football and kick off our college football coverage for the year. So, Carl, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, guys. I did about 20 minutes of research for this. I hope that's enough.
Unacceptable. If you listen to our show, you know that's entirely too much research.
It's about 10 times more research than I did.
That is 20 minutes more research than I did. Although I guess looking up the Big 12 standings kind of counts. So
John has put together some what you would call superlatives, I guess, right?
Yeah, superlatives, because, you know, Big 12 football is so bad, it's like going back to high school when my high school team lost our homecoming game 54-0. We were the Fighting Irish also.
This explains so much.
Wow.
Wait, I had no idea that about you.
Yeah, actually. Neither did I.
Oh, yeah.
It really does. It explains a lot.
Yeah. Oh, no, it doesn't, because we were built after Hurricane Katrina. I wasn't raised on the Irish. I was born in it.
All right, then. Well, we will get into these superlatives, and we'll start. So Carl has not seen these at all. He has no pretense for this whatsoever. He'll be firing from the hip, genuine answers. The first question, the first superlative, is the most likely team in the Big 12 to be the one true champion, in air quotes, whose coach then gives an angry interview after they are snubbed from the Final Four. Carl.
Well, we actually have two true champions this year. For some reason, we're the only conference in college football to play a round robin schedule where every team plays every other team, but then also have a conference championship game. So I really think the first true champion who's going to win that round robin deal is going to be Oklahoma State. Really favorable schedule, getting both Kansas State and Oklahoma at home. But I do think that by December, Lincoln Riley's going to have it figured out, and he'll beat them in Dallas to win the Big 12 conference championship game.
And once again, will the Big 12 fail to put a team into the Final Four?
I think if it's Oklahoma winning that conference championship game, yeah. I think they're going to be a 2 or 3 loss team going into that game, and I don't think that's really going to cut it.
And no love for your Kansas State Wildcats?
I don't know. I just think there's a lot of off the field issues, or not even issues, just off the field stuff with Kansas State. And I just don't think they're as talented of a football team as either Oklahoma or Oklahoma State.
All right, then, John, your thoughts on your favorite conference in America?
Right. So as we're talking about the one true champion, I think it's great to point out that the existential problem that our conference is, where they're just these things we've imposed on the college football society that ought to be really eliminated. We ought to free all the teams. Here at Notre Dame, we only play for the national championship. And that's the one true champion. And that's why my answer is the University of Notre Dame, because we're going all the way and we're winning it this year. So
that's bold.
If you listen closely, you could hear every listener to our podcast hitting the 15-second forward mark.
Well, if I can say, whenever I'm listening to the podcast and John starts talking about Notre Dame football, I know that's my cue to go to the bathroom. I got about
2 minutes. This is a good bathroom break.
Harsh truths.
All right, so I'm definitely not picking Notre Dame to win the Big 12. I'm also not picking Oklahoma because their souls are going to be crushed by Ohio State the second game of the season. And Oklahoma State's colors remind me too much of my beloved Cincinnati Bengals, who suck as a football team, so therefore they also can't be too good. I'm picking Texas because they have the best locker rooms.
And almost the same colors as your Cincinnati Bengals.
No, not true. Orange and white is very different from orange and black.
Burnt orange.
Oh, yeah, true. Sorry.
And I really like Texas this year, mostly because they have Kansas at home this year. Rough game in Lawrence last year for them. So I think they can rebound.
Yeah, they're very fortunate that game is at home.
Yeah.
That was kind of a deal breaker for me.
We all know facilities win championships.
You forget that a Texas team that beat Notre Dame went to Lawrence and lost.
You don't need to bring that up. Why do you bring that up?
My pick is the Oklahoma State Cowboys for no other reason than that. I guess no other two reasons than that. I love Mike Gundy, even without his mullet, which has so sadly departed. But I also cannot stand Oklahoma. I think the Big 12 is in desperate need of some new blood at the top of the conference. Oklahoma State's been so close for so many years. I like the Cowboys to win outright and the championship game. Why not? Bold predictions.
Bold.
Let's go to our next superlative. What John has called the best defense award, which in his mind, I guess, means the worst team because
Well, yeah, so it's like when you say someone has a really nice personality or like, I love what you did there. You know, like, oh, maybe we just do it a little bit differently. You know, it's like when the Big 12 coaches all get together and they're talking about, you know, the other teams, like, oh, well, you know, your team had a darn good defense this year. You know, Bob, too bad you lost again and aren't going to win the national championship at Oklahoma. So that's sort of, that was the thing.
Your defense meant really well.
Yeah, your defense meant really well.
They tried really hard.
Good intentions.
Yeah, they had all the best intentions. So, Carl, I'll distill that down for you. Who will be the worst team in the Big 12 this year?
Now, for this one, is Notre Dame still in the Big 12?
Oh, but yeah, sure.
No, okay, fine, whatever. You won't have the worst defense anyway, so. What do you want, Carl?
I'd probably have to say Iowa State. Pains me to say this as a K-State fan, but I think the KU is going to be on the up and up. I think that actually, you know what? Just with all the off the field kind of issues, I would not be surprised if Baylor doesn't win a game this year. I don't think they'll have the fan support
because they'll lose all the games, or because they literally will cease to have a football program.
Both, either or.
Yes.
Mostly, probably that. I've heard though, no death penalty somehow. But yeah, no, I think that Baylor is going to be the worst team in the conference. I think just all the negative buzz and all the negative media with it. I don't think their fans will come and support, and I really don't think I can't see how their players are really into Baylor football this year, are motivated for that this year.
All right, John.
Yeah, I don't know. This has been a struggle for me because, you know, it's a tenet of Catholic teaching now that you kind of can't really be in favor of the death penalty. But I really want the death penalty to happen to Baylor. So really, really a moral quandary that I'm in, but pretty darn sure Baylor's going to get the death penalty. They certainly deserve it. So they're going to have the worst team because they're not even going to have a team.
Well, thoughts and prayers in your moral quandary. We hope you can come to some kind of peace.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm discerning.
I'm going with pass defense as a whole as being the worst team in the Big 12. I don't get it. Every single year I try to watch a Big 12 game and I'm befuddled by how they just don't know how to play defense at all.
If you squint your eyes really closely, arena football is basically Big 12 football.
Yeah, it's not that different.
Yeah, my high school played like a Big 12 team, just minus the offense. Yeah.
And the defense, clearly.
Oh, no, the defense was there.
Yeah, they were right there, 54-0, man, yeah. Right there. Right on the cuff.
For as bad as Notre Dame defense was last year, I think Big 12 defense is probably still worse.
I know Big 12 defense is still worse.
All right, my worst team, best defense, Kansas breaks this formula. Like, I'm sorry. I know, Carl, you think that Kansas is on the up and up, but ever since the departure of one of my favorite coaches of all time, Mark Mangino, that program has been cursed, and they will continue to be cursed.
Wait, were they not cursed when he was the coach there?
They won an Orange Bowl.
Yeah, he won every Coach of the Year award. He won the Woody Hayes Coach of the Year award.
Akeem Talib.
The things I learned on this podcast.
So yeah, Kansas will continue to be the worst team in the Big 12 until the world ends. Let's do the Mike Leach Memorial Trophy for Coach of the Year in the Big 12. Right? Is that accurate, John?
Why not? Let's do that.
All right.
There's no objective truth anyway, right? So let's just relativize everything. Yeah.
And there haven't been, like, you know, 10 other better coaches than Mike Leach in the Big 12 or anything.
No, yeah. I mean, Mike Leach is a seminal figure in Big 12 history.
He actually is, though. If you really sit back and think about it.
Oh, those tech teams like 7-8 years ago, those were fun with Michael Crabtree and Graham Harrell.
Yep.
Yeah.
He set the tone for the conference for a long time. So, Carl, who will be the Mike Leach Memorial Trophy winner in the Big 12 this year?
Bob Stoops. You heard it here first. Bill Snyder stepping down, and Bob Stoops is going to go home to Manhattan before the season starts, and he's going to lead Kansas State to an 11-1 regular season.
Wow!
So is Bill Snyder stepping down at like 6-0 or 5-1?
Like 0-0.
0-0. Oh, before the season even starts. Okay, I like that. I like that.
All right, John.
Yeah, so as long as we're going with alternate history, I think this year the Big 12 media, just everyone's tired of covering the Big 12. It's bad football to watch. So what they do is they just mail in all their ballots early. They mail them in before the season even starts. And one coach consistently has enough hype to win that first ballot, and that's Cliff Kingsbury, Texas Tech. It's absurd. It's like Tennessee, except there's zero accountability. Like, I hate all the hype that goes around with Tennessee, but at least people are starting to get angry about how they're not winning. With Texas Tech every year, it's like, we're probably going to be pretty good. Then they win six games, and they're like, this is amazing. You know?
And then they go 6-6.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I don't think Kingsbury has ever won a Big 12 coach of the year.
It's probably because he hasn't deserved it.
That's probably a fair assumption.
I'm going with Tom Herman because, in reality, Tom Herman's actually getting more hype than Cliff Kingsbury, and I'm actually going to take this superlative a little bit seriously, which I know is a little off color for this podcast. But yeah, Tom Herman will win Coach of the Year in the Big 12 because he coached at Ohio State, and that's really the only reason.
You were doing such a good job of being serious.
I know.
I am going to take it somewhat seriously as well. Mike Gundy, my guy. If Oklahoma State does make a big run, end up the regular season champion, he's been there at Oklahoma State for a long time, and is deserving of the honor, especially now that Bob Stoops is out of the conference, but also Mark Mangino posthumously. So we're going to now move to most likely to be John has transformed into Prison Mike from The Office. He's got the bandana around his head. It's just so you guys know at home how much things have dissolved here.
I've turned off like John's video because I just can't handle it anymore.
Carl, I swear we're better than this like half the time.
Oh, I blame me. I blame me.
At least 50% of the time.
We're trying really hard to impress you, Carl.
Yeah. Oh, no.
You're so nervous around you. We like you so much. All right. Most likely to be a first-round bust of players, because we've talked about teams. We've talked about coaches. Let's talk about some of the better players in the Big 12. Most likely from the Big 12 this year to be a first-round bust in the NFL. Carl.
That's a tough one. Baker Mayfield, I guess. Mm. I don't know if he's going to be a first round guy, but I really don't see him developing into anything. If we want to talk about first round, like Hall of Famers, probably greatest of all time. Out of Texas Tech last year, I really like Pat Mahomes, winning 7 Super Bowls here in Kansas City. So that's another way you can look at it too.
I think this is a tough one too, like Carl said, but because there are so many options. Really.
Agreed. That's where I was going with this.
It's a wealth of choices. And really, I feel like it's disingenuous to pick just one name. And I'm going to say anyone from Oklahoma State really just has a chance to get this award. Have kind of a bizarro season, like, you know, I don't know, Brandon Wheaton, and get drafted in the first round and then just sail off into mediocrity.
People forget Brandon Wheaton played baseball for like 4 years.
Well, that's the Browns' problem for drafting a 28-year-old quarterback in the first round.
In the first round, yeah.
Did they trade up for him?
Yeah, they did.
Probably.
He was the 22nd pick, so they traded back in to get him.
And they also drafted like 6'1" Colt McCoy, coming off of coming off of a national championship injury.
Yes, an injury.
The Browns are gonna brown.
Okay, well, since we changed my initial pick for best player in the Big 12 was pass interference calls, because I feel like those are always influential in every single Big 12 game. Can't pick that though. So I'm gonna go with Shane Buechele because I actually think he's going to have a very good year at Texas. I've mentioned before that I think he's probably a little bit of a Heisman candidate. Probably should be more. Should be considered more for the award than he currently is. I don't know if he'll be a first round bust though. He's going to have a good season this year.
All right, and I'm going to go with Baker Mayfield too, Carl. I'm with you. He has all the makings of a Cleveland Browns draft pick. He's got some minor off the field issues. He's got a little bit of a
just minor.
Who among us hasn't tried to run away from law enforcement and been body slammed by police?
Tommy Reese.
Dude, that comes with the territory in the Big 12. Like all the stuff you guys are making fun of Big 12. Stuff for like even this, like going in blind, that's like every test I've ever taken at a Big 12 school.
That's just, you know, doing Big 12. That's just how you do it.
Yeah.
I guess this whole round of discussion has been very Big 12. Yeah. Baker Mayfield's my pick. Let's do the last one. Best sportstown/best venue in the Big 12? Carl, we'll start with you as a Big 12 guy, as a guy who spent 4 years going to Big 12 football games.
Definitely a homer pick, but I really love game day in Manhattan, Kansas. I was actually looking at a small Catholic school in Illinois my senior year of high school, and around October, I was kind of like, yeah, I kind of want to see what some of the other schools are like. Kansas, the closest school to me, was automatically ruled out too liberal. But I mean, just game day atmosphere in Manhattan is, it's going to be the loudest 45,000 seated stadium in the world. And just from Aggieville to Aggieville before and after a big win, or just even in the streets, just drinking. Am I allowed to say that, Cooper?
Yeah.
Yeah, drinking soda.
Yeah.
Drinking soda.
Hydrating after the game.
Drinking soda.
It's important to hydrate.
Drinking soda on the way to and from the games. I think Kansas State is one of the only places that'll let you like leave the game during halftime to go drink more water in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm. That's really considerate.
They believe so strongly in not getting dehydrated.
So I just love Manhattan for the game day experience, for the football experience.
All right, well put. John.
So I've been to, I think, exactly two Big 12 games in my time. Three Big 12 games. And I think the best one, well, only one of them was in a Big 12 stadium. So I'm going to go with Norman, Oklahoma. It was, it's a ton of fun. It was great being there. The Oklahoma band, very nice. They brought us apples and water. You know, much like the people at Manhattan, Kansas, water bottles, very nice. Kept us all hydrated. No, just just water and apples. And then marching out, we only got harassed by like, you know, half the stadium. So that was great. It was a fun experience. It was great beating Oklahoma and Norman, and it seems like a really cool place. So I'll go with Norman.
All right, I'm going with AT&T Stadium. That's it. That's just AT&T Stadium.
Does that count? I don't know if that counts.
I don't think that counts.
It does this year. It does this year, I guess.
It counts.
That's a cop-out answer.
Yes.
It's because everywhere else sucks.
I think someone's nervous for a visit from Oklahoma.
I am not nervous about that game at all. I'm nervous about other games that Ohio State has to play. Not really too much about that one. In Columbus? No. Oklahoma doesn't stand a chance.
I've only been to one Big 12 game.
That was not the experience. Maybe you want to experience the Big 12.
It was in Lawrence, K-State versus KU. Ooh. And I can truthfully say I have played in slow pitch softball games that had more energetic environments. So on reputation alone, I am going to pick Morgantown, West Virginia, because that place seems absolutely wild. You want to talk about a place that lets you hydrate really well, that encourages really, really, really thorough hydration. Morgantown, West Virginia seems like a very responsible place. And they're very responsible too about how they dispose of couches.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
Very responsible towards the environment. It's one of the more it's really green.
Yeah.
Conscious.
Space and landfills. But so, hold on. This is my beef with that. If AT&T Stadium doesn't count as a Big 12 arena, then I also don't think Morgantown should count, because Morgantown is less Big 12-esque than AT&T Stadium is.
Yeah, Morgantown belongs in the Big East. So
I don't think the Big East belongs in the Big East.
Agreed.
Yes. Sorry, John.
All right. That was our Big 12 preview. Carl, anything else you want to add for the people at home?
No, thanks for having me. It was a good time. Yeah, have me on again sometime.
Sure.
Yeah, I think after Oklahoma beats Ohio State, right?
Uh-huh.
That's fine. Okay. I don't care.
I look forward to that. Yeah, let's have him on after that game. Yep. Let's do it.
All right, Matt. Thanks, man.
Not a problem.
All right, we thank Carl for joining us this week. Thank him for bearing with us as we talk some Big 12. It's going to take us a little while to get into the college football shape, I think. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't been doing any off-season training, and we didn't even have like a preseason game, you know, like a blue-gold game sort of thing, spring game. So we're really behind. We're going to have to pick that up.
I don't know. I've been drinking my milk, so I'm good.
Okay, Coach Harbaugh. So, yeah, we're going to do some more college football previews as the season gets closer.
So stoked.
All right. But now we're going to get into a couple of quick segments. We're going to hit these quickly. I think we should start with Who's Got Beef, because this is the biggest beef in Who's Got Beef history. McGregor, Mayweather, they started their press tour, which I think is more exciting than the fight will end up being, but that's just my opinion. If you guys don't remember this game, we basically look at a beef and we describe it strictly in terms of beef. So the McGregor-Mayweather beef, which is very real. How would you classify that beef, John?
This beef is amongst the tenderest of loins. It's a very nice cut of beef. Rather expensive. But it comes in small quantities each. And you got to be careful with how you treat the loin. You can easily overcook it, but you can cook it pretty much however you want to, whether it be the oven, the grill, broiling it. Really, you can't do it on the stovetop, but I mean, don't cook beef on the stovetop. That's just a bad idea. But it's delicious, and it's easy to eat. You can consume it really quickly, and before you know it, you've eaten the whole thing, and you've sat there, and you've watched all these bizarre press conferences, and you've seen them hurl the most bizarre of epithets at each other and grab each other's flags and bags full of money. But it's great. And I think it's going to end in the most perfect way possible, which is the bell dinging, McGregor and Mayweather coming out to box, and McGregor just straight up kicking Floyd Mayweather in the face.
Can't do that.
Knocking him out.
This actually ruined it for me. I've learned that there is a clause in McGregor's contract that if he does this, that is anything that is not boxing, he forfeits all of his money.
He will make the money back.
Yeah, in donation.
I will start a GoFundMe to have Conor McGregor roundhouse kick Floyd Mayweather. I will personally pledge money towards that GoFundMe.
Well, he'll knock him out, and he'll be the only person to have ever knocked out Floyd Mayweather. So
that would be so satisfying. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I really want that to happen. But anyways, I'm rating this beef as a fake char, meaning like kind of like you went to Burger King and got a Whopper and you see those grill marks on the patty, but you know they're not real, yet you still eat it anyways. That's the beef between McGregor and Mayweather. Because unfortunately, it's awesome. It's delicious to consume, but you just know that it's not really real. Because I feel like they kind of have like respect for each other.
Yes, because I was just going to say that. I agree.
Both total. Hold on, sorry. I'm really thinking of what word is appropriate here.
Yeah. How about jagaloons?
How about just
jagweeds? Jagweeds.
Jagweeds.
Yeah, they're both jag. Okay, so I feel like they have a little bit of respect for each other because they're both jagweeds. Really, they are.
I don't know if we can use that, but okay.
No, we can use it. Yeah.
Yeah, we can use that. That's safe.
Yeah.
I want to say some other things, but I'm just not going to.
John, you kind of took mine because I was going to say this is just a very, very, very expensive cut of beef.
Yeah.
That you eat and then you owe the IRS millions of dollars in back taxes. Like, can we just take a minute? How insane is it that Floyd Mayweather, less than 2 years ago, fought in a fight with the biggest payday in history, and the guy is now broke? He's broke.
Hold on, but he still has enough money to throw dollar bills at Conor McGregor at a press conference. Yeah,
and then his crew came out and like picked them all up. Yeah. Quickly. or it was Monopoly money. One of the two.
He pays a guy hundreds of dollars to cut his hair each week, and he doesn't have hair. He's bald. It's not like he's got a little bit on the sides. He's straight up bald. That's how he's run out of his money. Things like that.
No, I think he's run out of his money because he like puts hundreds of thousands of dollars on sports gambling and just doesn't make the best choices in life from what I've gathered.
Yeah, probably listen to our podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Floyd, if you want to come on the podcast, actually please don't. Terrified of you.
That'd be so scary. Well, I mean, if he's coming in through the YouTube live, I guess it's fine. You know, he can't hurt us that way.
We wouldn't be able to keep the it would become an explicit podcast.
It would. all right. Let's do quick dope or not. Summer edition, because as we said, it's the summer and we've very thin on things to talk about. John mentioned that this past weekend you were just outside swinging an axe around.
Yeah,
taking some hacks. It was some dry hacks.
It was a pretty aggressive lawn working weekend here in South Mississippi. We removed I don't know, 6 azalea bushes that we had had for, how old am I?
Oh, man, azaleas.
Like, I don't know, like 16 or 17 years. So it involved loppers, which these big pruning things. And then we got out a chainsaw, and then we got out an axe, and then we drilled holes in them and poured weed killer into the stumps. So it was a pretty involved deal. But I was thinking, dope things. Do you think swinging an axe is dope?
I quickly, before we get into that, I'm all for botany with John.
I was actually thinking, do the listeners have any email, like, you know, need any gardening advice? Just send those emails our way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That can probably not become a thing.
I'll record next week under our orange tree by the squash garden. Because these are all real things we have here.
Is swinging an axe dope? John, you obviously think it is dope, right?
It's so dope.
All right, Cooper, is swinging an axe dope?
I'm so torn.
You're torn?
I'm torn. I just naturally want to disagree with you. Not dope. Not dope. Swinging an axe is not dope. Why swing an axe when you could swing a sword?
Have you ever swung an axe?
Yes.
How many times?
Plenty of times.
Plenty of times.
All right. I never swung an axe, but it seems dope.
We'll do that for the bachelor party. We'll have a gardening segment so you can swing an axe.
Sure. What else? Dope or not? Summer edition. Dope or not? Weddings. Cooper and I were at a wedding this past weekend. We were obviously all at my wedding about a month ago. The wedding season, of course. Dope or not? Weddings.
As a firm proponent of winter weddings, I'll say I'm ambivalent about summer weddings.
That's harsh.
Two guys who got married in the summer.
I feel like that's a little racist towards seasons.
You brought race into it.
I didn't say there was anything wrong with summer weddings.
Someone who fully supports a loving marriage, weddings are dope.
I think weddings are dope. I'm probably obligated to say that as well. But I had a great time this past weekend. Enjoyed myself very much. Enjoyed hydrating very, very thoroughly. It's warm out in the summer, so you got to make sure you do that. Right, John?
Yeah, especially when you're swinging the axe.
Especially when you're swinging the axe and gardening. Last
dope hydrating and swinging the axe go together. Just throwing that out there.
That's a good point. That's a good disclaimer. Don't hydrate and swing an axe at the same time.
You need to hydrate.
I'm so torn between what to recommend.
Next one.
Last one. Because these three could go together really well. It's just an interesting combination of things. Sunburns are very summer. Sunburns are in right now.
No.
Are sunburns dope or not?
Sunburns are never in. As someone who has a mortal enemy called the sun, and whose children, when they open the refrigerator door, are probably going to die from light exposure. This is bad. Sunburn is bad. I hate sunburn. No one should like it. Flip side, aloe vera, very dope.
Did you wear some sunscreen this weekend while you were doing some botany?
Yes, I did. I can't walk outside for like more than 20 minutes without wearing sunscreen.
Did you hydrate thoroughly?
I did. I had a bottle of Aquafina. Actually, no, not Aquafina. We don't buy that. It's expensive.
All right.
I don't know. Whatever the blue label is at Walmart.
Cooper.
I don't know. How? I was trying to think of a fun way to defend sunburns as being dope. I don't know. But that's pretty much empty. So we're going to go with not dope. Sunburns are definitely not dope.
Yeah, skin cancer isn't dope, guys.
Yeah, don't support skin cancer.
Agreed, but a nice base layer is dope. So I'm going to say sunburns are, in fact, dope. Because it's the middle of July, and we need to disagree on something. Oh, my gosh.
There you go. Jeff's going to the mat for sunburns and for the internet.
It's a hill I'm going to die on. Of skin cancer. All right, waste of data. Let's finish this episode up.
Thank goodness.
John, you start.
All right, so my waste of data is directed at Cooper. Cooper is the resident of Cincinnati on this podcast, and for some reason he didn't feel the need to bring up the fact that Zach Cozart was given a donkey for making the All-Star game. That would have been great to talk about.
Yeah.
Why?
I'm sorry.
Donkeys. Who doesn't like donkeys?
You're giving me a waste of data for not talking about something?
Not talking about the donkeys. Have you heard that there are mammoth donkeys? They're like a foot taller. Apparently they're big in Florida right now.
Of course it's Florida.
Yeah. So yeah, Cooper's my waste of data for not bringing up the donkey.
Boom. Okay, well, I'm going to cry myself to sleep. No, really, Jeremy Lin should be crying himself to sleep because he recently said that the Brooklyn Nets will make the playoffs. Sorry, Jeremy Lin. D'Angelo Russell is not good enough to take the worst team in basketball and bring them into the playoffs. And somehow I had to squeeze an NBA talk into this podcast. There's no way the Nets make the playoffs. I mean, at the very best, they're the third worst team in that conference. So, sorry.
My waste of data is StatCast, this cool new tool that Major League Baseball has. And I'm all for using advanced statistics. I'm all for analytics. But so last night, as we're recording this, Jackie Bradley made one of the best catches you will ever see to rob Aaron Judge of a home run in the eighth inning, key to a Red Sox win over the Yankees. And like the immediate reaction was amazement, but then you had to break down the launch angle, and we had to break down the catch probability, and we had to know the exit velocity. And not that all that stuff isn't impressive, but not to sound like a baseball lifer, like a hard-o baseball like old man, but I kind of just wanted to appreciate that catch for what it was, which was one of the most amazing and athletic plays you'll ever see in baseball. So, and that was the show for the week. Thank you guys for tuning in to this episode of All the Small Takes. Thanks for bearing with us. Thanks to Carl for coming on. If you guys have any thoughts on this week, please don't share them. We're sorry. Tune in next week and keep that weather eye out for some news later this week about other places you can find All the Small Takes. So until then.
Cool.